This is the Bigfoot Information Project podcast. Greetings, everyone. Greetings and salutations. This is the Bigfoot Information Project podcast, otherwise known as the BIPcast, episode number 2, in which I talk to Scott Harriet. I know I had said last time that there may not be another one, but it seemed to go over pretty well. I got a lot of great feedback. I appreciate that. So here we are again. And as a matter of fact, I have Craig Woolheater from Texas Bigfoot, who's also agreed to do one of these, and I'm working on two other people right now, so who knows? There could be, at least 5 or 6 of these things before we're all said and done. As I said, I appreciate the feedback I was getting. The feedback, if you'd like to leave feedback, if you'd like to make any comments or discuss today's show, please head over to BigfootForums.com and look for the BIPcast section. It's right there. You can also call the BIPcast info line at area code 612-246-4690 and leave a comment there or a question for Craig, who will be on BIPcast 3, unless somebody else sneaks in there ahead of him. Today, as I said, I am going to be presenting an interview I had with Scott Harriet. Scott Harriet's work includes being a host on TechTV's Internet Tonight and contributing regularly to TechTV's The Screensavers program. That's back when TechTV was, well, not as sucky as it is right now. He also contributed somewhat less regularly to CNN's Newsnight with Aaron Brown, who is not related to me in any way. He also made several documentaries, including This Exit Only, a film about some of America's unique destinations, Walking the Pacific Coast Trail, which documents a 2,600-mile hike along, the Pacific Coast Trail, and probably his most recognizable work to those listening to this podcast, Squatching, a documentary that looked at the sometimes bizarre world of those interested in Bigfoot. Squatching also includes a video taken in 1992 by Scott and a friend of his of what appears to be a Bigfoot in some heavy brush. He talks about that in the interview. So with all this experience under his belt, it's no surprise that my first question dealt with what I should call him. How would you describe yourself? You're a filmmaker. Are you a documentarian? Or what do you call yourself when you have to describe yourself as something?
I call myself... that sounds like such a... I call myself the wind. the last few years I've been doing self-produced documentaries.
Okay.
One of which has been on Bigfoot. That was the first one I did. Because prior to that, I worked at Tech TV.
Right.
For 4 years, I did on-air stuff. And with all the geniuses there, the technical geniuses, I was able to learn a lot about the up-and-coming new digital equipment. So I figured, when I was going to be done at Tech TV, making films is something I've always been interested in, making documentaries. So when that was done, that's what I did. I bought a Canon XL1S, which wow. I still have, and which I strongly recommend is a great camera. And, got a PowerBook and Final Cut Pro and just started making stuff. And it's been a lot of fun. Not a super money maker.
Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't use that word.
No. Yeah, we'll get there. Don't jump ahead.
Two words. Yeah, yeah. But I really enjoy it. I mean, it's just really satisfying, the shooting, the editing,
sure.
Just the process.
So you're kind of like an Apple commercial. You went out there and you made your own movies and you...
Absolutely.
Totally drank the Kool-Aid there.
Yeah, plus producing some spots at Tech TV.
Yeah, sure.
A little bit about editing and working with editors, and I just think it's one of the more fascinating aspects of filmmaking. And the first one I took on is one of my favorite topics, Bigfoot. And I did Squatching, and then Journey Towards Squatch. So the other one I did, I actually did 11 years ago.
Okay, I was going to ask you how that, because one of them is it Squatching is the longer one, right?
Squatching is the 44-minute one,
right?
And
right.
Journey Towards Squatch is the 22-minute one.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was that's while I was doing stand-up, which stand-up comedy, the single worst profession to be involved in, if you're serious about Bigfoot. And especially if you claim you've had a sighting, which I truly believe I have had a sighting, because, you know, half the people you tell have this look on their face like, and, you know,
right,
waiting for the punchline. But,
right.
Yeah, Journey Towards Squatchdom was like, the genesis of that was just kind of in response to a lot of people I'd met in the realm, or heard about in the realm of Squatchdom, of believers and people interested, who I just felt didn't help the phenomena in a scientific manner. In other words, their claims are so outrageous. I had 28 sightings. I saw it get out of the ship. I found yet another Sasquatch bone. So that was kind of the inspiration for Squatchdom. That's why it's an out-and-out mockumentary.
Right.
And
but by someone who cares. I mean, it's like, you know, it isn't like you're mocking. I mean, that's the thing I like about it, is it's from somebody who is totally trying
into
to.
It.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It'd be really interesting to actually, you know, if you showed it to someone who didn't know who I was and maybe didn't know that much about Bigfoot, and then asked them afterwards, do you think that person's a believer or disbeliever?
Right.
The guy who made the film. And I suspect most would think that maybe I was a disbeliever because I was having fun. But, I mean, anybody who knows me knows I'm totally serious. I mean, I absolutely am serious about this phenomena, and B, really, and I mean, in the highest probable terms, close of absolute 100% certainty, think there is a physical reality connected to this phenomena, that there are actually such things as big feet.
How did it all start for you? What was the beginning?
Oh, I think like many today, you know, with seeing, you know, movies and TV specials, mm-hmm, when I was young, you know, glimpses of the Patterson film in different programs. And another big thing, I think, was my dad actually bought me a book, one of Green's first books. I think it was called The Year of the Sasquatch. You know,
sure.
One of those, the red-covered one, when he was up in Canada. And just all those, you know, historical sightings, and I'm like, you know, that just seems like, you know, the sheer volume of the reports. And I think even when I was young, you've got to figure, you know, I recall thinking, well, all these can't be true, but, you know,
right,
as Green says, you know, all this phenomena needs for it to be true is just one of these signs.
Right, they don't all have to be true, not, right?
Yeah, you know, and that actually makes it, I think, one of the interesting aspects of the whole phenomena is that whole separating the wheat from the chaff, and can you really
completely
do that? I mean, I think the forum, actually Bigfoot forums, continually points that out to me, how difficult that is, because unless you're actually there, how can you really know? I mean, you can kind of tell the real, you know, the probable hoaxes, you know,
mm-hmm,
everybody gets those. But then you have something as mysterious and really interesting as the Patterson film, and it's,
mm-hmm,
just like, how can you? I mean, I definitely lean toward that. I believe it's a hoax.
Yeah.
I would say about 85% certain. But can I say absolutely certain? No, of course I can't. I mean, there's just so many things on both sides that make it such a great story.
That's, you know, that's the thing that probably is the most interesting to me, since I've been hanging out on the forum a lot, is that previous to that, you would read a story and you're like, wow, nobody could ever have just imagined that. That can't be fake, because that, I mean, those details seem,
yeah,
so real. But in reality,
right,
yeah, there's people out there just totally making up crazy stuff.
And I think the thing with the internet too is that it's such a mixed blessing. With
completely.
The internet. I mean, you know, it's so much easier now to widely spread BS. Yet on the other hand, if something genuinely happened, you can get it out there, and, you know, hopefully, you know, get some kind of objective investigator out to a site to maybe find some evidence. So it's, I guess I tend to look at it more negatively, because I just think it's just like, how do you know? You just don't. It's such an interesting topic, and so many people are more and more into it. I almost trust more the one you hear about that wasn't initially publicized.
Yeah, right.
Because, I mean, you know, gosh, the whole labyrinth of the telephone game that happens when people are talking and talking and talking,
mm-hmm,
and, you know, by the time you get person Z, oh, it was 25 feet tall and there were lasers shooting out of its eye. Really?
Exactly.
Fascinating.
Yeah, and I feel for those people that sort of, you know, they have an encounter, this is some of the people, right? They have an encounter. They go, wow, what the heck was that? They go on the internet. They start looking around. They find a place like the forums. They post their sighting. Yeah. And it's like, no, no, don't do that. Turn around, leave. Because immediately you're just prepared for, you know, crap. And I think a lot of people just get hopped on. And I'm not saying that's wrong, because most of the time it is crap. A lot of these people are coming out there, and you can see that it's either crap or it's just misidentification, or it's wishful thinking or whatever. Right. You know, it's not always a purposeful hoax or something. But I often think, what was it like back in the day, in the 60s and 70s, when these people from all around the country had no internet? You know, how did you do this before... Yeah. Email and instant messaging and all that kind of stuff. I guess you wrote letters and talked on the phone.
And which it's really interesting, because it's like, which mode of communication is better? Is it because it's quicker now? Is that an advantage or a disadvantage? I think there's both. It's just so hard to say. But I think what this illustrates, when it comes to a topic like Bigfoot, is that and it's the great thing about science, it's got to come down to incontrovertible physical evidence.
Yeah.
I am not for the killing or capturing of a Sasquatch. But as I point out in Journey Towards Squatchdom, if I encountered one and I was really hungry, I'd hammer one like a blunt if I could. But I just think, and especially since we're dealing with something, a type of being which apparently is so close to us physiologically, and now we have the whole CG element to deal with, which they didn't have to deal with in the 60s. How much could this, you know, images can be more readily and easily manipulated now, which therefore seems to cry out for an even, you know, more of a need for actual physical incontrovertible evidence.
So you're not in favor of killing one.
Not actively. No. I don't buy the argument. Well, if we kill one, we're going to save the others. And I'm like, well, you know what? They've done a pretty goddamn good job of remaining hidden so far. So I don't really buy that. I just think killing anything, let alone a Bigfoot, to prove it to us, on a spiritual level, I think you're adding some bad karma. I just think it's kind of personally, I think it's kind of a vain notion. We get in our little groups as humans, and we're like, oh yeah, we'll kill that, and it gives us a feeling of power and knowledge and all that.
And then we'll stuff it, and then we'll put it in the museum.
Yeah, we'll put it in the museum, and then we'll only put five.
Just the one. Just the one.
Just the one, and it's just sad, you know. So.
Well, how do we do it then? Where do you get that in that proof?
Incontrovertible evidence. Yeah. Well, we have to wait until the actual spaceship lands and then go on board. I think you're only really left with one option, and that is remains. And there could be various ways, a really organized, a small person, small number of people type of study. I think the model, like the Goodall Fosse model, there's a reason that worked and why those women were able to be close. And I've said this in other areas. I think it wouldn't surprise me if that's what happens. You have, a female who is dedicated to doing this, and the simple physiology of this, I think, would allow them to get closer, because I just think we have too much, men have too much testosterone floating around, and animals like this would sense that. I mean, that's why it worked with gorillas. I think women are more patient.
Yeah.
I'm generalizing a bit, but I would bet that's what would probably happen. It also wouldn't surprise me that if somebody somewhere in a drawer, in a barn somewhere, has a bit of a Bigfoot skeleton. That would not surprise me. The history of science has quite a few examples of things like that. You know, some kid finds a molar, he doesn't know what it is, it's in his drawer.
Right.
That would be an interesting part of a chronology of discovery. I would just hope, if that did happen, then what would happen hopefully would be, you know, a small band of, a primatologist armed with real, you know, this is state-of-the-art film and video equipment, then embark on, I would think, long-term projects. I mean, you know, what was it with the I remember this one thing about orangutan studying. I think in the Borneo, they knew from some physical evidence there were these orangutans in an area, and yet it took them 2 years to actually get one on film.
Right.
So I think something like this just...
There's never been anything like this in the field of Bigfoot research. I mean, nothing even remotely like this. There's guys out there, and I know some of them, who are spending an awful lot of their time out in the bush, but nothing like what you're describing.
Yeah, I think you would, you know, I still like basically the idea, although it would require so many of them. I remember Doug Hychek talking about this once. I was talking to him on the phone when he was preparing, I think, Legend Meets Science, about... He really wanted to get involved in a project where there were literally hundreds and hundreds of small cams placed in areas. And I think something like that, where you had some kind of command center, and again, not a lot of people involved. I think you, the more people you have involved in something like this, with each person you actually diminish the chances, because I think creatures like this are incredibly sensitive. They would know, they would sense that. And then once some kind of visual contact was made, with these cameras immediately get to that area, try to set up something, and that wouldn't even guarantee a rate of success. But I think it's probably going to take something like that.
I don't disagree with you. I think that my fear would be, though, as soon as you did something like that, let's say you bring back just like, you know, God's gift to Bigfoot research. You've got 20 minutes of... two little Bigfoot cavorting out in the middle of a field or something, right? Clearly could not be a fake. You got it from multiple angles, whatever. There's an argument out there that says, well, as soon as you do that, sure, you're not going to kill one. You don't want to kill one. But as soon as you show that they're out there, you're going to get science, you know, capital S science, coming down on these things like white on rice, and they're going to be trying to find this thing. The first guy to pull this thing out, he's going to cut down a whole forest to try to get one of these things.
Yeah, it is. It's always the double-edged sword. I would say generally the longer I've been in this, the more I go toward I just leave them alone type thing. I mean, I was lucky enough to meet DeHinden a few times at some conferences up in Canada, and it seemed like every time, I think I met him three times, and each successive time he seemed less and less interested in being.
It's interesting. It seems that
I was trying to build up I was trying to build up an intro to my DeHinden impersonation.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't mean to step on your DeHinden thing.
I'm kidding. Goddamn! Just leave the goddamn things alone. All right. Anyway, that's it.
We'll just edit that part with me stepping on your line out, and it'll be fine.
Yeah, it's okay.
So you mentioned the Patterson-Gimlin film. You're not a big fan of it. I mean, that's no secret.
Yeah.
Why? What's wrong with it? When you look at that thing and you're like 85% certain it's a hoax, what are your red flags?
Okay, here's my, just my general reasons, and because we're just in the middle of a phone conversation, it's going to be hard to be super specific, but the overall, as much, I've had dealings with Greg Long. I've had problems with the guy. I think the guy has problems. But the totality of his book, in essence, convince me that it's probably a hoax. Again, convince me that it's probably a hoax. Not convince me absolutely it's a hoax. I had heard rumblings before about, Patterson maybe being a little shady and whatnot, but I thought he did an excellent job, unless you're willing to seriously speculate that he made up interviews, which I don't believe he did. I think he played fast and loose with some of the stuff, but I don't think he's going to just make up quotes and whatnot. I feel that in that book, he got a lot of people who actually knew Patterson, making statements, which, by the way, I didn't find on the pro side. It has rarely been done in relation to Patterson. It's all just based on the film, which I think is the most important part of the analysis. But I really think that he successfully presented his picture of this guy who was not an asshole, excuse me, but just kind of a lovable rogue who definitely believed in Bigfoot, but was clearly, in my opinion, not beyond manufacturing some evidence. I think he showed that, when Patterson moved to Yakima and got into Bigfoot, how suddenly, footprints were turning up in Yakima, which had never turned up before. There were little things like that where wherever Patterson went, there seemed to be evidence popping up. Now, one could say, well, because he's looking, and I go, yeah, you know what? The odds of how much he found, I found a little amazing. So, and then also, something that he actually that Long doesn't talk in the, about in the book, but I feel, and having worked in film and video, that I feel is fairly consistently overlooked about the film, is that we're talking about it was shot on 16mm film
mm-hmm.
at roughly 80-85 feet away. And, you know, then people bring out these comparisons with 35mm Gorilla. No, it doesn't look anything like it. And I don't think people quite appreciate the difference in clarity between a 35mm well-lit movie ape-looking and something shot shaking around quite a bit, even though it's been stabilized and you zoom in. But again, when you zoom in on these things, you're losing a little bit of clarity.
Yeah.
I think I don't see anything in that film which necessitates me saying it has to be muscle movement. I really, one aspect of Long's book, I think he did a really good job of showing that that Patterson was a very creative guy. I mean, not only his drawings, he was into it. He had published a book the year before,
mm-hmm.
but also the whole thing about him building stagecoaches from scratch, that he certainly had a knack for his hands of creating things. I think the personality type he was. Oh, and then also, I actually talked when this whole thing broke. I actually called Philip Morris. I think I was the first guy to call him. I just said, "Oh, the story is breaking." So as believable as Bob Gimlin is to this day, and I agree that he is believable. That doesn't mean he's not lying or wasn't fooled. I agree that he's believable.
Yeah.
But Philip Morris told me on the phone, I found it equally, if not more believable, that he definitely, in 1967, talked to a guy named Patterson from Yakima who was trying to build a Bigfoot-type suit, and he talked to him twice on the phone because he called him back and said he was having trouble with it. I don't, by the way, think that what you see in the Patterson film is a Morris suit. I think it was something on the way that he was learning on the way that led to the final creation of whatever he created, if in fact it is a suit. But that, to me, was another major red flag, that this guy was definitely willing to do stuff, to use false suits. Doesn't necessarily mean he was going to try to pass it off as a real big
sure.
People have. Well, he could just be doing it as a dramatization. Yeah, but you know what? He never talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
He never mentioned it to anybody. Gimlin never heard. Apparently, said he never talked about stuff like that. And also opinions from guys like Chris Wallace, the Academy Award-winning guy, did The Fly, and how he always leaned toward the suit being, or the subject being real, an actual Bigfoot. But when he looked at the clearer version available on the Legend Meets Science, he changed his mind. He goes, well, now that I can see it clearer, now I think it is a suit. He's seeing, which I think, could very well be the seams that are running in the upper thigh and kind of, look a little suspicious to me. I also feel that Hieronymus's basic body type fits Patty pretty well. We know he knew those two guys. I completely agree that there are quite a number of specifics about his story that are contradictions over mm-hmm. everything he has said. But I take into account that he's a lot older, and his basic claim that he was the guy in the suit, he passed the lie detector test on a nationally televised, not that you can't beat, people have beaten him before, but it's the totality of all that stuff that leans me fairly strongly toward thinking it's a guy in a suit.
It's
now,
Bob, yeah.
That it's probably him. Because nobody debates. He knew. I mean, they lived near each other. And he kind of basically fits it. Now, to me, the sticking point, why I'm not 100%, well, A, I wasn't there.
Right.
B, it is Gimlin. I mean, Gimlin is an interesting thing. I mean, I think that if it was a hoax, I would say he strong in all probability had to be in on it. I mean, you probably know this argument fairly well about the whole that the prints would have had to have been
sure
probably fake.
I've made the argument myself. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Although I would love to see, God bless him, Tube, Matt Crowley, who's in Bigfoot forums, who did some great experiments in the last year or so with the kind of showing that what people thought were probably dermal ridges in all probability are not dermal ridges.
Mm-hmm.
He's posted, and I don't know if he's going to do these or someone else will, you know, in all seriousness, what would a guy in a suit wearing certain type of feet, what kind of prints would he leave? I mean, we all like to, if you're on one side of an argument, we easily go, oh, it could never do that, or it could easily do that. But what about actual experimentation? I think that needs to be done. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, as someone who is much more often than not defending the film, I completely agree with you that no one has ever done it. And that's not saying that it couldn't be done, but I don't know that anybody's actually tried, you know, in a really concerted way.
Yeah, that's what I believe that. It's not enough for me to hear the argument. Well, no one's been able to do it. And I go, you know what? How, like, that X Creatures thing was pathetic.
Oh, it was horrible.
I mean, they couldn't even get the color right. I mean,
no.
It was orange. So how serious were they really? They obviously weren't.
And my favorite part of that is you got Chris Peckham, I think his name is. He's on there. Great. Well, yeah, he's like, well, there you go. He's like, he's talking like they, like, well, there it is. Like, there's the perfect recreation. We've done it. Anybody could. And I'm looking at the film going, are you looking at the same thing I'm looking at? Because that doesn't look anything like what Patterson came out of the woods with.
Well, that was a horrible show. That episode was so bad because it was obviously done. Just before that, there had been so many blatantly pro-Bigfoot shows that they figured there was, well, now we have to do a skeptical one. So the whole thing was just going to be slanted toward a skeptical view of the phenomenon generally, and specifically the Patterson film. So,
To get back to the recreation, I would love to see a serious attempt by someone. You know, I think Matt Crowley would be someone who's obviously going to be able to add a lot to that, because what I like about him is he's got his opinions, but he seems to me like the kind of guy who's going to go where the evidence takes him. You know, he's not necessarily got.
I think Matt is one of the more of anybody I've ever met actually involved in the Bigfoot phenomena who's interested in it, I would say he is maybe easily the most consistently scientifically minded person. Because, you've seen this, Biff, though. I mean, people start like to talk that they're being objective or scientific, and then all of a sudden it's just these probabilities or opinions suddenly in the language, and you see it in postings all the time, suddenly just become certainties.
Oh, yeah.
That's the
problem with these forums. I mean, and yeah, I'm talking about the problems with these forums like I got nothing to do with it. But these, when you're on a forum, it's not like this. It's not like you're talking to somebody, you know. You're,
it's very hard to get give and take, yeah.
It is. And it's so easy to find yourself suddenly defending something like like your family's lives depend upon it. When in reality, if you were sitting at a bar with this guy, it would hardly be worth, you know, raising your voice over. And I think that's the environment that it just, and I've been involved in these things myself. And now at least I'm getting experience enough to say, you know what, it's not worth it to do this, because it's just a waste of my time. And that's what,
yeah, I mean,
that's what I find fascinating about this recreation, because I'm also been around the block enough times now to know that no matter what happens in the recreation, both sides of the argument will find what they need.
I think all you could do, let's say that, and I know we're all keeping our fingers crossed that D-Foot could actually do that.
Just, you know, seriously, man, go make your suit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the guy's made some really good points, but I completely agree, by the way. If any, you know, I am definitely a skeptically leaning person toward the Patterson film. But I agree that, you know, D-Foot, you know, as many times as I've seen it done on the other side of the argument, has made these incredibly bold and unsubstantiated claims that he's just not backing up, you know, like claiming absolutely that Gimlin lied.
Yeah.
So, you know what, maybe he is lying, but you don't know he's lying. How do you know he's lying, you know?
Yes.
Now, here's the thing, I think. If you had a recreation, let's say, again, this would involve same type of camera, and I think you would have to get as close to the type of film that he, I think it was Kodachrome 2, and even, you know, getting information from Kodak about the, you know, the different chemical ratios that were used that year. I mean, really make it specific.
Yeah, as much as possible.
General lighting condition, the distance, every element of it, every element of it. And if you could fairly easily recreate it, all I think it would show, it wouldn't absolutely conclusively prove one way or another, but what it, to me, what it would prove would be that to make the claim that it has to be a Bigfoot is false. We just basically recreated. Look, you showed that. You're showing the knee bend. See, that, by the way, that whole argument is such baloney to me. Oh, the bent knee, gate, the compliant. Oh, that's so difficult. You know, and Tube showed easily. And then Krantz demonstrated. That's infamous. It's impossible when he walks like it. To me, the IM index is a pretty weak argument because we don't know the exact angle of the subject in the film to that. And I've just never really common sense-wise looked at it. It just doesn't look it doesn't seem impossible out of the range of a human in a suit. I just don't see this weird thing that and you can't measure it accurately because you're guessing. You don't know exactly what the angle of the subject is to the plane of the camera. End of story. All these arguments made by some who say, oh, it's conclusive proof, it's hogwash. It's been 5-6 years since those claims have been made, and not one peer review group has come forth and claimed, oh, that's right, it has to be, because it's bad science. It's just they're excitable claims, made out of desperation, I guess. I don't know. Am I getting heated up here? I'm having too much fun. I think it is. I mean, to me, the Patterson film is probably the singular most fascinating aspect of the whole Bigfoot phenomenon because it's so many interesting on both sides of the argument. I mean, I just happen to feel there are better arguments for it being a hoax than being an actual Sasquatch. I do believe Sasquatches exist. I mean, I feel very certain of that. I just think this was...
That particular piece of evidence, right.
Yeah.
The thing that in my mind, and I don't think it's a hoax, but if it is, I can't conceive that it's a hoax and that Gimlin isn't in on it. I just can't imagine how it could have been done.
That's what my 15% is. Yeah, because I agree that he seems very believable. But it's actually Gimlin himself who points out in Long's book. I mean, he brings up the example of how believable Ted Bundy was. Nobody who knew him could fathom that he could have been doing what he did. You know, again, this gets back to the experimentation thing, too. If a guy in a suit could leave an imprint like the famous Laverty photo, then, to me, you would open up the serious possibility that Gimlin was duped, that he was just there and got fooled. If you can't even come close to recreating the Laverty photo using a guy in a suit, then you're almost forced to have Gimlin be in on it because the only other argument would be that, well, Patterson had made the footprints ahead of time, right?
Yeah.
And set up with his accomplice, and then he has the guy in the suit walk next to them where he couldn't sink in. So that gets back. All these other how hard was the soil, blah blah blah.
Right.
Stuff.
No, I tend to agree with you. I mean, if you can't be in a suit and make those footprints, then Gimlin's in on it, and that's
And
then you've also you've also got other people coming to the scene. You know, the next day, several days later, you've got Titmus on the scene, and you got to fool those guys too. But again, nothing is impossible.
True, and plus Titmus is Titmus took the photos and said they were interesting, but he also. Perez quotes him as saying that he was definitely skeptical because, look, I've worked up and down these roads for how long? I never see any prints like this. Lo and behold, Roger Patterson shows up and
there they are.
Not only
right.
is it on film, but there's prints, la, la, la. I just tend to think it probably was, probably a fake.
And I suppose the only way we're going to know is if a serious recreation attempt, one that has a likelihood of succeeding, is attempted.
Right, and it just seems like, you're right. It's like the only thing left about this topic that get all the elements and
somehow do it.
Somehow do it and see how real it looks. I will say this about Defoot, though. I mean, even though he makes these bold claims, he hasn't backed up. Some of that padding stuff looks pretty dang good.
And I have said that. I wish he would just make his suit because I am fascinated. With what he's shown so far, I think that he's killing himself by the way he's doing it. But I want to see that thing finished. I want to see it because I've never seen a good Bigfoot suit, a really good one that wasn't produced for some high-budget movie, and even those are stupid-looking. I mean, I want to see this guy make a suit that looks like Patty and moves like Patty and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Because that's another thing that we hang on. We say it's never been done before. Well, if he can do it, more power to him. God bless him. I want to see it. But, again, he's not doing himself any favors right now, that's for sure.
Right. Yeah, and you know, on the pro side of the Patterson film, again, there is nothing that I've ever seen in the film that looks like a obvious suit wrinkle or anything like that. But you know, again, you've got guys like Wallace, who's dealt with suits all his professional life, and D. Foote, and apparently some others, who see things that, you know, and again, who knows how biased or unbiased it is, but that they just don't see the impossibility. I mean, I think the one thing which I'm sure, well, not sure of, I feel sure of, is too easily people say they see muscle movement. And I think that what they're seeing, they may be seeing movement, but that doesn't prove it's a muscle under there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, it goes back to experimentation. If you have a certain type of padding under there and you walk, it may look like what you think is a muscle, but it doesn't prove it's a muscle.
Right.
Exactly. Let the experiments continue. And we should put Tube in charge of it, damn it. Any and all profits go to him and his Bigfoot Research Center. I don't know.
The Tube's Center of Bigfoot Excellence.
Exactly.
It's not quite as famous as the Patterson Gimlin film, but you have your own video. You have your own encounter.
Not even close, nor it should be, because there's just all, you know. And again, I've been accused by some, or at least suggested by some. Well, you argue so vehemently against.
For those who aren't familiar, can you describe your video and the circumstances surrounding your video?
Yeah, it's hard to do it in a nutshell, but it was. It'd be 14 years ago.
Was it that long ago?
Yeah, wow. 1992. God, it takes so long to tell a story, but I'll try to. Anyway, I had called Willow Creek, inquiring about if there were any mule or horse packers, and because I was interested in doing some sound blasting experiments up in the valleys up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked the lady on the phone about what she thought of Bigfoot, and she was very skeptical. She goes, well, I lived here all my life. I don't believe it, but a lot of people I know here really believe it. And she goes, it's kind of funny you ask me this, because I don't get a lot of Bigfoot questions, but a guy just called here yesterday saying his son and his son's friend had just seen this 6-foot-tall ape-like thing staring at them at the edge of the forest near where they live, near the mouth of the Klamath River. So she had put him in contact with Al Hodgson, who I had met a few times. I talked to Al. I said, Al, did it sound like a hoax? He goes, no, this guy was really shook up. Talked to this guy, the father of the kid, and was convinced after talking to him that at the very least the kids had seen something big and alive that they couldn't explain.
Mm-hmm.
So this had just happened, like, within 24 hours, right? So I pick a buddy of mine up, drive 700 miles up from Los Angeles to interview these two kids. It was the 8-year-old kid of the father and then the 12-year-old neighbor. So we went up and we interviewed the kids separately, and their stories matched, and I found them both very credible. And in essence, they said that they had the 12-year-old, they were looking for snakes in this dry creek bed. The one kid looked up, and about 100 feet away, up on this embankment, pretty much fully exposed, except from roughly the knees down, it was behind vegetation, was this heavily muscled, short-haired, but very kind of thick ape-like thing, and grayish, beigeish, lightish colored.
Mm-hmm.
So the 12-year-old sees it first. The other kid's like 40 yards away, and he's like, Joshua, get over here. So he runs over. He sees it. And they both look at it for about 10 seconds, and they turn and run back to the house. And as I recall, they both said as they turned to run, you know, they kept their eye on it. As they ran, this thing clearly turned and walked away on two legs. I was very impressed by their story. I mean, because, again, we interviewed them separately, tried to trip them up, you know, hey, it's okay if you're joking, or maybe you saw it. He goes, no, man, I know what I saw, blah, 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 you know. So we looked around in the vegetation where they said it was. There were some interesting indentations that were about the size of a big footprint, but it was vegetation, so there was no toe delineation or anything. So as it turned out, I was heading back up there a few weeks later up toward Oregon and Washington, and I kept in contact with the father, and I was trying to think what the next step to do here. Well, where this happened, it was right on the edge of a long row of hills, very densely vegetated, steep row of hills. And it was private property because there was intermittent barbed wire running along the base of this hill.
Okay.
So we figured we'd find out who owns this property and try to get permission to go up these hills to look on what you could see from below were abandoned logging roads. That hill had been logged about 15 years earlier. So I figured, look, if there was something to the kid's sighting, maybe there's some footprint evidence up on the roads. So we find out who owns it. It's this older couple who've lived in the area for 35 years. We go to talk to them, and we just tell them straight up what the kid's story was. And she goes, oh, yeah, we know they're there. Just like talking about a coffee table.
Like the cats.
And in fact, I still, yeah. It was so matter of fact. And in fact, I still have to this day a Christmas card she sent me that says, anytime you want to come back and visit our friends, you're more than welcome. It was just this real,
that's awesome.
Wow. Yeah, real freaky. They said they had friends who are Hoopa and Yurok who had had a few sightings over the years, and they didn't doubt at all that there were some of these things up there. So they said, go anytime you want. Just, you know, we would not encourage any guns or anything, and don't let anybody but yourselves go up. So fine. So we, when they didn't know we were going up, started up this hill. Now, I had a high 8 format camera, and Daryl, the father, actually had one of the old VHS cameras where you actually load a VHS tape in the side of the camera.
Wow, yeah.
And we started up this hill. Now, at no time, as I'm heading up this hill, did I ever seriously entertain the notion that any kind of direct thing was going to happen. Because, you know, if you see a bear at point A and you go back 3 weeks later, that you're not really expecting to see the bear again.
Right, because they walk around, right?
Yeah. You know, why would it? So it was kind of a creepy hill. I mean, it was, again, 40, 45-degree angle at times, and there was a lot of thistle at the bottom and really no sign of any human, you know, any human beings being up that hill. A couple of faint deer trails here and there, but we start up this hill, and our beacon and our goal is this lone redwood that is at the top of this hill, and that had been left when the hill had been logged. So you could see that through kind of the canopy of the trees in the lower part of the hill. So we keep going. It takes us like an hour and a half, 2 hours. We get up there. Well, when we get to this tree, the hill levels off quite a bit to approximately 15 degrees. We get about 60 feet past this tree, and we're looking straight up the hill still, and it's very, very thick right in front of us. And suddenly I notice this darkness, which was low down because it stood out from all the greenery, and part of which was a log that was laying there. And then I noticed within that darkness what appeared to be these two relatively big brown eyes looking out of this darkness. Now, I didn't immediately go on Squatch alert, because it was low, you know, it was like pretty low to the ground. So it was interesting and a little off-putting because this thing was totally locked onto us staring-wise.
Sure.
And it actually didn't move for about 30 seconds, and then it started this very slow swaying back and forth. And it was frustrating because it was shadowed back. I mean, all you could see was the reflection of the eye. Two reasons I didn't think it was a bear was bears don't sit and stare you out. They don't. You know, they leave.
Yeah.
Secondly, any animal, I think, with a snout would have been out in the sunlight. This thing was just maddeningly back out of the light where you could only see its eyes, and you'd occasionally see a little reflection off the face. So, you know, and again, at this point, we're not really creeped out. Start videotaping this. We got interviewed on A&E about this, and they show this video, and I'm actually saying Soka Soka at certain times from the Albert Austin thing, you know, just making chimping noises, whatever, just in case it's one of these buds, you know. And do that for about 10 minutes, and then, well, how do we get this thing to move? Well, we're not feeling particularly threatened. Again, it's roughly 40 feet away, and it's pretty thick vegetation in between us and it. So we take one, maybe two steps. And God is my witness, the eyes of this animal, coupled with you could see them dilate, gave off this friggin' red glow, man. I mean, it was like, you know, read a lot about Bigfoot stuff. This immediately took it out of the realm of possibility into the realm of plausibility, if not probability. I mean, it was like two cigarettes being dragged on in each of the eyes.
It's still back in the shadows at this point.
Back in the shadow of this thing.
How much sunlight is coming down? I'm trying to. So is it?
It's 2:30 in the afternoon, and it's filtered sunlight, I would say, slightly behind us.
But you can see this is red glowing.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. And you hear us actually on the tape almost simultaneously going, its friggin' eyes are going red.
Now, does it look to you like eye shine at that point, or does it look more like illumination?
It looked bioluminescent to me.
Okay.
I don't necessarily think that's what the explanation was.
But that's what it looks like.
Yeah. It looked like it was being generated out of the center of the eye, coupled with this dilation.
Okay.
So, as you know, and I'm sure listeners of this, you know, it's a fairly commonly reported thing. People who said they've seen these things up close, Native Americans, cops, loggers report this word direct. So now I'm like, holy crap, you know, okay, maybe this is one of these things. So that stopped us in our tracks because you don't know, is it scared? Is it a warning?
Is it the lasers warming up? This is where the lasers are going to come out. Yeah.
Exactly. Is the mothership getting ready to land? I don't know. So, you know, and then I learned later that, you know, whatever this animal was, that, you know, mammals generally, when they're frightened, their eyes dilate because it lets more light in, and it's kind of a defense mechanism. It allows, you know, theoretically one to see better.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever this animal was, you know, it just when light goes in, it refracts back, you know, the red part of the spectrum. So, but lo and behold, there it was. And it was really red, dude. It was like red. I'm like, oh, my God. So now what do we do? Well, I then thought, well, if we're crouched down. I was crouched down, like, shooting the video of this, and Daryl's looking over my shoulder. And I figured, well, what if we separated? Because it could see us crouched down. If we separated, maybe instinctually, whatever this was, would think that we're trying to surround it. And as a result, maybe it would move off in the other direction, and when it did, I could get some video of it.
Sure.
Well, I move down to the right. I get about approximately 15 feet down to the right of Daryl. And as it turns out, he goes in the same direction. As I recall, I think he thought it was too thick to go left, so he kind of went in the same direction. So he turned away from it. And as he later explained to me, he said peripherally, all of a sudden he saw like a big kind of motion move to the side, like a sidestep thing, like a big mass, and he wheels around and he starts videotaping, and he is freaking out. I mean, he's going, okay, it's right here, and you see his finger come into the video, and he's going, it's right here.
Yeah.
Excuse me if I'm crying at this moment, it's right here. And if you actually listen carefully on the tape that has the audio of that, you can hear me over to the side going, take it easy. So he tapes for like 29 seconds, and then all of a sudden the camera goes limp in his hand and he starts crying. He will not look back toward whatever he's seeing is seeing. And again, you know, you move 3 feet in this stuff, you can't see what you just saw. It was that thick.
Mm-hmm.
So there I am. I'm at this point probably 10, 15 feet away from him, and I'm just trying to calm him down because he's losing it. I mean, he's like, it's right there, it's right, you know, and I'm like, take it easy. Now, I'm getting freaked out, too, because he's freaking out. You know, we have no gun. We have no pepper spray. We're way the hell up this hill. And I figured, just based on his reaction, that he got something on videotape. Again, I don't know what, because he's just pointing. He's not describing. He's freaking out. So discretion being hopefully the better part of valor, I decided, let's get the hell out of here.
Mm-hmm.
So we start down the hill. We'd stop. We'd listen. Didn't hear anything. Keep going. Obviously went a lot faster downhill than we went up. Get down the hill, pop the videotape in, and just based on his reaction, I'm expecting to see something right away. And as I recall, I put the videotape in, I got right up on the TV, and I play it. And I'm not seeing anything. I mean, there's a lot of foreground and background vegetation, and I'm like, what the hell, you know, and play it through. And then I rewind it, freeze frame it where he starts taping, and I back up from the TV. And I'll never forget, it was one of those moments you look and you go, oh, my God. I looked away from the TV, and I remember saying, be objective, be objective, be objective. I look back, and there about 30 feet approximately away from the camera, what appears to be this huge Schwarzeneggerian mountain gorillian arm sticking out of the side of this bush. Now, I was just there, right in that immediate area, and there were no, apart from that log that was down, all the vegetation was ground vegetation, like rhododendron, primarily. And there's this thing about at least 5 feet at the tip of what would be the shoulder sticking out of the side of this bush, and then where the elbow would be, that bends, and then the upper arm would be obscured by this big bush it's standing behind. But it really does fit. I mean, it's got like a big bulging deltoid muscle like a mountain gorilla does, and it kind of hourglasses down to like a bicep and a tricep. Then there's a space between where the arm, and again, I'm telling it, don't roar shark this, don't overlook, you know, what could this,
right?
But there's obviously this object that's there, and it's, there's no trees, and it's also very light colored, which is the same, you know, again, the basic description the kids gave a few weeks earlier at the base of the hill. So, okay, let's test this upper arm theory. If that's an upper arm, there should be, even if it's obscured, at a 45-degree angle up and to the left, there should be something in the shape of a head, and it should be approximately the same color as the arm. And lo and behold, you go up, and there, I would say roughly 3 or 4 little branches, is this smoothish, domish, whitish head. But right about where an eyebrow ridge would be down, it's black. And it's contiguous with the shoulder. Like you can, you know, and again, I'm going, don't roar, you know, and this is like 6 feet at least off the ground.
Sure.
So now what I do? Well, let's watch this tape again and look for movement. Now, we were fortunate that day there was virtually no wind at all. If you look at that footage, it's in, on Squatching, and if anybody saw that original sightings episode, it's on there too.
Yep.
Is all the vegetation, it's like a still life. It doesn't move. And twice within that 20 seconds, that theoretical head tilts out twice. And you can, you hear Daryl react as it tilts out once. You hear, and now I'm kind of understanding why he was reacting the way he was reacting, because I mean, to me, there's clearly a humanoid shape back there. Now, I can go get into the whole hoaxing possibility or plausibility, which I find almost nil. Not that I can't be hoaxed, but anyway, I'll get into that in a second. So twice it tilts out, and after the second tilt out, that's when the camera, you just hear him go, okay, and the camera goes off, and he loses it.
Now I'm curious about that. Has he ever discuss that? I mean, what was it just the enormity of the situation, or did he, you know, because I'm trying to get to this, a lot of people have said that they have very strong reactions, and there's a lot of speculation about whether that's infrasound or whatever, and I'm just curious, did it just sort of like overwhelm him, or where did that come from, that reaction, do you think?
I don't know. My guess is, I mean, here we are, we're looking at some creature's eyes, we definitely see the glow red.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's,
That all by itself, I guess, is pretty creepy. Yeah, I'll give you that much.
Yeah, but then I think what happened was, like I mentioned before, when he peripherally said he saw this thing move, and he said it was, you know, it was this thing, and then he saw it. As he's looking through the viewfinder, he realizes, holy shit, this is probably what my kid and the other kid saw a few weeks earlier, and it's peering at you. Not only is it standing there trying to do some kind of ninja thing, just being still, but then it peers out at you. I think that would be sufficient enough to freak you out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's was my guess. I don't know about whether there were any pheromones in the air or whatever, that whole thing, because people have reported that.
But it's a big thing. It's got glowing red eyes, and yeah, I suppose that's...
Yeah, well, here's the thing, though. See, I don't think... Well, I'll almost wrap up the whole story here, and then I'll give you what I think happened that day. As we go back the next day with two more people, we go up where this thing was standing, we go 30 feet beyond it, and it's really, really thick. I mean, we're on our hands and knees. It's like machete thick stuff.
Mm-hmm.
30 feet beyond that, and all of a sudden we open up this vegetation, and there's this, like, 25-foot-long, 15-foot-wide nest.
Hmm.
Clearly, some animal, some being had made this type of a bedding thing. We crawl into it. Completely reminded me of, like, mountain gorilla nests, which are usually on the near the tops of hills. And when you sat in it, and again, it's still on this like roughly 15-degree angled slope, as you sat in it, you're completely surrounded, like a little fortress in there with this higher rhododendron vegetation around you. And then you looked down in the vegetation where was this hole, not cut out or anything, but that clearly something had crawled in and out of, probably several times. And if you followed that hole and went down about 30 feet, you would be right where the eyes were, and then to the left of that where the subject was standing. In my opinion, because that day we went back and we looked at the log where the eyes were, in my opinion, what he got on video with the upper arm and the head was too small to accommodate that creature. I think there was two of them there that day. I believe that there was a sighting a few weeks earlier by the kids, a legitimate sighting. There's a small group of them up there on the top of the hill. I mean, you know, they're primates. They've got family units. Probably a small one. We get up there. Probably no human had been up there in God knows how long. Gets curious, comes out of this nesting area. We see it. We're checking it out. And then back in the thicker stuff, his mom, dad, or big brother. And as soon as we made that potentially threatening move of separation, like any good mammal, it made a move to get in between us and the young one. That's what I think happened. Just based on having been there and looking at the video and comparing the size of the log area, or where the log area was, to what's on the video with the arm and the head. Now, we also found some hair that was on some branches up there, and it was given to a guy named Sterling Bunnell. You know, again, I don't know the guy's credentials. All I know is I know he does exist. He is a doctor and apparently has primatology experience. And they used his report in the A&E show. And basically what he said that the hair samples provided to him, that the internal structure of the hair was very similar to chimpanzee and mountain gorilla hairs that he had. But in his opinion, they were similar yet distinguishable. You know, again, I don't know what, I mean, that's probably all just eyeballing by him, and I don't know how valid it is, but I do know that there was a guy named Sterling Bunnell, and he did that, and he made that opinion. So when you take the totality of everything that happened, the kids report, going up the hill, the history in the area, according to the people, seeing the red eye glow, watching Daryl's reaction as he shoots, gets the what appears to be a huge upper arm of a primate, a head, going back the next day, finding a nesting structure. When you take that all in totality, that's why I think in all probability there was not one but two Sasquatches there that day. Can I say 100%? No. But every other scenario I've run through my head doesn't make sense. And the one, the somebody had said, well, what if, you know, because, again, anybody can be hoaxed. Lord knows I can be hoaxed. And so, so what would be the hoax there? Well, I'm convinced that it's definitely a humanoid thing back there in the bushes, so that would have to be some guy in a suit. But I know for a fact, I mean, I saw it for 10 minutes. There was an animal there whose eyes glowed red. I mean, I can't say it any more clearly than that. So somebody said, well, what if you were looking at some animal like a wolverine or something, and then there was a guy waiting back there in cahoots with Daryl, whoever, and I go, okay, but that doesn't make any sense because
he's up there with his pet wolverine, right?
He's up there with his pet wolverine, but I mean, it was so close, like within 20, 25 feet at the most. There's no way any big mammal would sit around anywhere near a human being in a suit or otherwise. So that makes no sense. So it still comes back to what I think probably happened. It just does, nothing else seems to fit.
Have you ever
that long and I try, and that's the condensed version of the story.
That's the Reader's Digest. Come back tomorrow when Scott finishes his story. You know. Have you ever seen? And I don't. And honestly, I don't remember if I've seen this even. But have you ever seen any threads on the Bigfoot forums or anywhere else for that matter where people who don't know you have discussed your video and the events that they know about regarding your video? And if
no,
you,
I mean, I've always. I know that the thread's on there, and I've, vast majority of everybody's been really cool about it. I mean, just asking questions, and I, you know, answer the questions, and that's it. I don't know of any other threads, and I think there's a couple on there. Well, I mentioned the thread because in squatching, that's the last part of squatching is I include that video in there.
Yeah.
And squatching's not all about that. I mean, squatching's primarily about people I know who are into Bigfoot, both believers and skeptics, and just kind of yakking about Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Going to a fire lookout with my folks and trying to understand why I'm so obsessed about it and, you know, interviewing workers and stuff like that. But there's only been one guy who's brought up the, well, he's just pulling our leg, and I don't want to mention his name because I don't want to rag on him, but and he's basically a really good guy, and he's a good arguer on there, but he brought that up once, and I just kind of didn't really give it much response. I mean, I've said it before, and I'll say it now. I am more than willing to take any type of lie detector test. Anybody would want to give me sodium pentothal, whatever. I mean, I'm not paying for it, but right. I will
show up. Yeah.
Myself. I will show. Well, I mean, if you have to have me travel, you got to pay for the travel and
right.
the hotel, or come to my. If you want to come to my house, bring a lie detector authority. I will take the test.
Do you ever? I guess what I'm kind of getting at is, I mean, you've got a video, and it's not like Patterson's video, but you.
Oh no!
You must have some ability to associate with people in that situation, right? I mean, if you see someone go off on. You know, let's say it's the Memorial Day footage, which is very
right.
popular right now on the forum.
Oh, yeah.
You've got to have some ability to say, you know what, I know where those people are coming from, assuming that they're not, you know, hoaxing or whatever.
Right.
They've got a story. They believe their story is true. And I've listened to
right.
the soundtrack on that video. I mean, I don't believe any of those people are anything but genuine. I mean,
right.
is that frustrating? Is that, I mean, how do you deal with that? Or do you just
well,
not? You just
know,
like,
no,
don't worry
I mean,
about
I
could, it.
I don't really worry about it because I know that the video that was shot today, I know in no way is really of any serious scientific value. Because, I mean, compared to the Patterson film, see, at least you've got a full-bodied figure, whether it's a guy in a suit or an unidentified primate.
You got the whole enchilada, yeah.
There's a lot to study. This is something that was shot for 29 seconds. I mean, I truly believe it is a Bigfoot there, but it's only a head and an upper arm, and you've got two head movements coming out. I mean, the reason it's the veracity that comes from me is because I was there.
Right.
You know, and that's I'm just sharing that with people, and you know, they can take it or leave it. But I in no way offer it up as proof or any type of hard evidence. Just like, look, dude, this happened. Believe me or not, again, I'm willing to take a lie detector test on it. So I kind of, you know, but on the other hand, you know, if somebody had said, well, somebody has brought up, they go, well, you of all people having supposedly had an encounter, why do you question Bob Gimlin? I go, whoa, dude. First of all, whatever has happened to me, whether I thought I saw Bigfoot or not, or whatever ever happened in my life, somebody, you should be scientific regardless. So you have to consider that possibility. And I think
mm-hmm.
people, I would totally understand if somebody was questioning me. I mean, I was a comic, for God's sakes, for 12 years. And on the surface, people, well, he's a comic. Maybe he's pulling a joke. And I'm like, you know what? That's a good thing to consider. All I can do is tell you that, no, I'm not pulling a joke, and I'm willing to take a lie detector test. I would be pissed if someone, kept up with that line of questioning without actually either giving me a lie detector test or something along those lines.
Yeah.
But I think regardless of whatever your personal situation has been, you have to apply scientific principles to this phenomenon at all times because it's just so rife with BS and misinterpretation.
Yeah, it's one of the phenomena I've seen, especially with people who have had some kind of encounter or sighting or something, is that their radar seems to fail at some point. You know, once they see it, either they start seeing it everywhere. You know, everything they hear in the woods is a Bigfoot creeping around behind them.
Yeah, that's another thing. I mean, you have to, you see that a lot. I mean, you have to, again, every situation is different. You can't, you must see this. I mean, having, you know, a curator at the Bigfoot, one of the main dudes at the Bigfoot forums.
They're not curators. No, that's somebody else that's got curators. We don't have curators. Moderators.
Moderators. Easily slipped into point of view that let's say if person A saw one for sure. Let's say they saw one. And now they're just going to assume when someone else says it's true that they're going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Scientifically,
right.
that's horrible.
Right.
It doesn't mean you should accuse them of hoaxery or anything.
Right.
It's just that you just have to take every incident separately and apply scientific principles. That's my opinion. Otherwise, you just get so much garbage and,
right,
so much yakking and blah, blah, over and over. You just get belief. It's like belief against belief.
Right.
And
well, you've just described the Bigfoot forums right there, because that's half of what it is. It's just belief against...
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah, I know, because, you know, if you break it down scientifically, it's so funny. I love the forums. I mean, it is a great... It's easily, I think, the best...
It's a lot of fun, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's a lot of fun and very addictive. But, you know, a lot of it, the vast majority of it is words coming back against words. I mean,
exactly.
Well, okay, there's more words. Where's the, you know, where's, you know, as Chris Kraska, a buddy of mine, says, show me the monkey. You know, it's like, if we're going to talk in a scientific way about this, then show me the monkey. You know, it's like, or show me part of the monkey, or otherwise it just gets so easily speculated upon, and then those speculations somehow mysteriously get molded into probabilities and blah, 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 and it's just, it gets messy. And I think, well, I guess what frustrates me is that for anybody and kind of interested in this, and they come in and they see some of these discussions, it's like these people can kind of see the truth, that it's just like, it's either someone who's such a diehard believer and then just all they're going to do is argue pro arguments, or a diehard skeptic, mm-hmm, who's going to do nothing but argue skeptical arguments, that nothing's really going on. It's just a contest.
Right.
And, I mean, I'm guilty of that. I definitely get it. I mean, you know, I get in there and, I mean, I you know, Pisces statements that seem to be a little too bold on either side, although I tend to go after those who make bold belief statements, because again, as far as people discussing knowledge between one another, I mean, there's really nothing beats the scientific method. And if you're not using that when you talk, then you're just, you're flapping your gums. We'll be right back.
Yeah. The BFRO.
Yeah.
What's going on over there? You know,
well,
is there anything you feel you can add to the conversation? I mean, it just seems to me that whenever I hear something that I think is the worst thing I could possibly hear, I hear something even more horrifying, and I just don't know what to make of it.
Well, here's the thing. See, you know, I mean, you know, let's just talk truthful about this. I mean, Matt Moneymaker runs a BFRO. I've known Matt for years. In fact, after this thing happened to me in 92, he somehow mysteriously got a hold of me, like within days. I told somebody, I mean, he's been into this for a long time.
Right, and right, sure he has.
Matt is definitely a believer in Big Feet and whatnot. And he, I think, has done some really good things in the field of research. That said, I mean, I just feel bad for Matt lately, because he just appears to have gone down this dark path of hypedom and you know, these expeditions, which just every time people go out, there's a report. And instead of it, I would think the responsible thing maybe to do is, you know, maybe to point out that these people aren't maybe necessarily seeing stuff, but because they want to and they want to justify the money they're paying.
Mm.
But they don't hear that. It's all about, ooh, whatever's going to get more, you know, business.
Mm.
I just really hope a light goes on there someday, because it's just sad. Just other things which, you know, you hear other people who've dealt with the organization. And again, the organization is Matt. I mean, it's him.
Yeah.
He runs. There's no like board voting or anything. It sounds corny. I just hope he sees the light again one day, because he just seems to be kind of lost.
You know,
really, no pun intended, but it is one. I mean, it's like a money-making venture now.
Yeah, isn't that unfortunate? His name is very unfortunate.
It's like he's branded the name, so now he's just going to try to exploit it as much as possible.
You know,
and,
I would love to do...
Don't sue me, because remember, the truth is defense. Okay, so anyway, I love you, Matt. If you hear this, baby, I love you. But damn it, you need some friggin' help, bud. Come on, get to a spiritual...
There you
place.
Go.
Go see the Dalai Lama, you knucklehead.
Tough love, that's great. I would love to do... Yeah. I was thinking about this earlier when I was on the forums. I don't mean to talk about them that much, but when I was on there and I was reading a thread that's going on right now, I would love to do a podcast like this about the BFRO, but I don't know that I would get anybody willing to defend it, and I certainly couldn't get anybody to officially represent it because, to your point, it's Matt Moneymaker. I mean, there is no...
Well, it is. It's Matt's thing. He's already, you know, he's always been the head high. It is him, you know, and... you know, again, it's not like it's so easy when some negative things happen to paint someone or something as being pure evil or something. and that's not the case. I mean, Matt has had some good, but that said, there's just been some really fishy stuff with it. And it's just sad.
Yeah.
It's more sad than anything. I just encourage anybody out there that, and I mentioned this earlier in the interview, is the less people involved with the particular research of the with the particular research of this field, the better. You have a lot of people out there, you know, just if you really are into this, go do it yourself. Go out, you know, get information you can or what you deem to be pretty good information about areas and whatnot, but then just go out yourself. Bring a camera, where, you know that the odds are very remote about something going to happen, but as soon as you get into, like, all reports being filed and me, and I just love it, just, to me, you're decreasing your chances. The more people get involved with any particular search, the less the chances of actually something happening. That's my two cents.
Well, that's great. You know, I've had you on the phone here for more than an hour now, and I really appreciate
appreciate
the time. So thanks very much, Scott.
Hey, no problem, dude.
Remember, as I said at the top of the show, if you have any questions or comments about today's podcast, please head over to the BigfootForums.com and look for the section dedicated to the Bigfoot Information Project. You'll see a thread there for BIPcast number 2. Go ahead and post your comment or question. Also, the BIPcast info line at area code 612-246-4690 is available 24 hours a day. Please, 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 please leave a message there if you'd like to make a comment. I'd love to hear what you have to say. Upcoming BIPcast, we have Craig Woolheater on deck. That would be another good reason to call the info line at 612-246-4690. Sound like I'm on public radio right now. And leave Craig a message. I'd love to hear your message. I'd love to play a message, a question for Craig in the show. That's why I set that up. And so far, nobody has taken advantage of it. I also would like to apologize for today's BIPcast being a little late. I've had some technical issues. This is still a relatively new thing for me, and I'm figuring out the best way to do it. The way I did it last week worked great. This time, not so much. So, you know, live and learn. So that's it. That's all for now. I will be back with BIPcast number 3, and as I said, probably that will be Craig Woolheater. We'll see, though, if somebody else, some mystery guest, sneaks in. Bye-bye.